Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri podcast by me, veterinary ethologist Myrn Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed. During a week of especially invasive post-election pre-holiday mania, I did something completely different. Instead of reading my usual end-of-the-day mystery, I read a short book by Chaim Shapira with the delightful title, Happiness and Other Small Things of Absolute Importance. Shapira is that increasingly rare individual in our world, a true Renaissance person. A scholar, philosopher, behavioral scientist, mathematician, and musician who strives not to impress readers with his great knowledge. Instead, he encourages them to look at life with childlike wonder and even the headiest subject with a certain amount of playfulness. To do this, he includes a mind-boggling array of quotations from diverse sources that make it easier to consider different facets of complex subjects. In the opening chapter, Shapira raises the question, is happiness truly possible? This is followed by that fun guy, Sigmund Freud, who commented that the intention that man should be happy wasn't part of the creation plan. But Shapira doesn't buy that. He reminds us that we shouldn't confuse happiness with periods of happiness. Happiness never seems to last forever. More like a few hours or days, maybe a rare week or two. But then he shakes things up by giving us Woody Allen's opinion. Allen believes that happiness occurs for much shorter intervals. But if anyone is happy for more than 2 days, it's only because someone is hiding something from them. I know people who think like that, and I bet you do too. The book next introduces some basic philosophical principles related to this happiness business. Naturally, I also considered these in terms of the human companion-animal bond. First, it's okay to do nothing while munching on something. Here, readers learn about the joy of doing nothing, which sounds like a simple thing to do, but it isn't, at least not without some self-generated guilt. But you have so much to do, shriek a thousand voices in our head. Nor is it easy to do nothing, let alone happily munch something while you enjoy doing nothing, if some killjoy knows you're doing nothing and senses you're enjoying it and wants to make you feel guilty. I know the power of doing nothing with confidence around animals. It's something I routinely recommend my clients do to help their stressed animals with behavioral problems. But I also know how incredibly difficult this can be for those living in a society like ours that celebrates human reactivity instead of self-control. What always amazes me about doing nothing is how it enables new thoughts, ideas, or answers to problems to suddenly occur to me. Perhaps there wasn't room for them before with all that mental clutter in my head. I suspect that, thanks to emotional contagion, doing nothing with confidence frees our animals to experience that same kind of whole mind-body refreshment too. Principle 2. Anger is punishing yourself for the stupidity of others. Or, anger is punishing yourself for your own stupidity. When I read this, I felt a kinship with Mark Twain, who admitted, "It takes me a long time to lose my temper, but once lost, I could not find it with a dog." Others weigh in on this subject, including the philosophers' philosophers, Baruch Spinoza and the Dalai Lama. But in the end, the author confesses he can't measure up to those two when it comes to anger control. Instead, he sides with Mark Twain. To count to 10 if you're angry, and swear if you're really angry. Anyone who says that none of their animals ever made them angry either is lying, not paying attention, or has a lousy memory. We all make mistakes, as do our animals. It's how they and we learn and mature. The key element is what kind of anger we feel and how we express it to an animal perceived as its cause. Most anger is an expression of fear. We know we weren't paying attention and put our animals in situations in which they could be harmed or harm themselves and others. We can't do the fear-flee response if the animal or others need our help. If we're really hyped up, the fear-freeze response is equally unacceptable. This brings us to the two most common responses, the fear-based fight and the fear-based tend-befriend responses. In the fear-based fight response, the person directly or remotely punishes the animal. However, some will dissipate their fear by kicking furniture, screaming like banshees, or punching holes in walls. The human fear-based tend-befriend response when an animal misbehaves occurs when people can't or don't want to dissipate their fear in one of the other ways. In the cases I've known or heard of, many of these folks consider themselves all positive. So instead of yelling at the dog, they cuddle the dog and whimper and cry while telling the dog how frightened they, the people, were, and not to ever do that again. These folks also may blame others for causing their animals to misbehave. Like the other fear-based responses, the fear-fight and fear-tend-befriend responses often make the person displaying the response feel better. But unless the person then seeks to ensure that the inciting event will never happen again, neither one helps the animal. All my thinking about happiness as it plays out in human-animal interactions caused me to recall something my dad used to say that would drive me crazy when I was a child. Dad was a reserved man raised in an orphanage worthy of Charles Dickens. His tales of heading west from Pennsylvania on foot and on his own at 16 seeking his fortune captivated me as a child. Tales of catching freight trains, having good and not so good experiences with tramps, and then my favorite, getting caught in Death Valley in a sandstorm. I could never get enough of that story. Every time Dad's birthday or Christmas rolled around, I'd ask him what he wanted. As a child, I could always think of tons of things I wanted. Consequently, it frustrated me when he always gave me the same answer, for you to be happy. I'd complain that that wasn't a real gift and then list all the things I thought he would like. But he'd just smile and sometimes hug me and say, for you to be happy. It wasn't until I was much older and wiser that I realized how much our willingness to seek and find happiness within ourselves means to those who love us, how this frees them to find happiness in themselves too. I also realized that this is true for the animals in our lives when we give them the physical and emotional stability to seek and find happiness within themselves. Some of the most memorable images clients shared with me over the years involve watching their dogs learn to play happily by themselves as stress-relieving changes take effect. A favorite involved a highly intelligent mixed-breed dog whose owner relieved him of the 24/7, 365 need to emotionally protect her, a job that overwhelmed him. Owner and dog lived on a lake, and her bedroom had a large window overlooking the water. One moonlit night, she suddenly awoke from a deep sleep. It took her a while to locate and get her head around the source of the unusual sound that had awakened her. In the large square of light cast by the full moon shining through the window, she saw her dog. Tentatively tossing a fluffy ball into the air, then catching it and tossing it again. This may seem like nothing, but that ball and lots of other toys had filled the house since he had arrived. But this was the first time he felt comfortable enough to play for the sheer joy and happiness of it, since he had assumed his protective role as a young dog several years previously. It was as if he was practicing at night before going public with this new experience. Just the thought of that woman and her dog sharing that moment of happiness and my small role in it still makes me happy years later. Though such moments may only last for a few hours, they inevitably change me. And when they do, it makes life easier for those around me, including the animals. So if you want to make your animals happy this holiday season, stop worrying about what kinds of treats or toys you can buy for them. Stop thinking about all the things you want them to do to make you happy. Find happiness within yourself first, and then everything else will fall into place.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.